Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record.
Time again for the Media Project. No, I'm not Rex Smith. He's away this week and I've seized control. I'm Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette, hoping we'll add a little insight into the media issues of the week. Joining us for the program is WAMC's Alan Chartok. Alan?
Hello, Judy. How are you? Are you everything all right in your world?
It's great to be back here with you. Also with us today is J.P. Miller, publisher of The Empire Report New York. Welcome, J.P.
Thank you for having me, Judy.
So we've got a lot to talk about this week. So let's start with the big issue of the week is President Trump lambasted the press yet again in a speech in Arizona. It seemed particularly sustained and vitriolic. What do you think's happening here, and what should we be concerned of?
Well, you know, Judy, in a single word, I believe it's scapegoating. This guy is the master scapegoater of all times. He takes a look at people who may not be all that popular, and he just says, okay, these are terrible people. So he attaches names to people, Crooked Hillary, or whatever he says about Marco.
This week we got Little George in reference to George Stephanopoulos.
George Stephanopoulos, Little George, that's right. So he's a scapegoater, and it worked, he thinks, to get him elected. So now he has to keep doing the same things he did then, and what he did then was to lambaste, you know, a whole bunch of people, and now he looks for people to do it with and the press, and he actually, at his when he gets everybody together in one of these paid campaign things, he points up to the press up in the galleries and said, and there they are, and everybody goes, boo, you know, on cue, which is a pretty terrifying thing because it brings you back to the late 20s, early 30s, and what, frankly, Hitler was doing at the time. So this is something out of that page. Look, a free press is not a perfect press, but it's a free press. Does the press make mistakes all the time? They do. Any of us, Judy, who have ever been attacked unfairly and stupidly in the press, know full well what it's like to be on that side of the coin. And we know that, you know, MSNBC and Fox News are not on one page. So there isn't one truth. But he knows that there are a lot of people who've been offended by the press over the years, and he's scapegoating us. It's traditional.
Yeah, JP, what do you think about this?
I agree with Alan that it is scapegoating. President Trump hasn't yet accomplished anything substantially legislatively. He has not delivered on the promises to his base, and the way that he is firing up his base is attacking the press. I think he does have a legitimate gripe with the press in that reporters, I think, are supposed to, in an ideal world, report the facts of events as they happen. And as I watch the Twitter feeds of a lot of members of the media, of the New York Times and the Washington Post and press outlets everywhere, the members of the media now sound a lot more harsh to the president than members of the opposing party. And you'd expect the DNC chair and Hillary Clinton and other Democrats to be opposing Trump more harshly in the press. And in fact, that's not happening. The press are a lot more vitriolic, especially on their personal Twitter accounts, to both President Trump and his staff.
It's interesting you bring that up, JP, because I have a question for you. We are reading this very morning that the editor of the Wall Street Journal sent out a missile to his reporters and saying, stick to the facts. Pete Seeger, as he sings the great song, there's always a paragraph in there about publishers are guilty of prostitution. And the reason that that's pretty funny is because his Rupert Murdoch, who owns the Wall Street Journal, and he's letting the reporters know, in no uncertain terms, the editor is, and I'm assuming that Rupert may have had a discussion with the editor, or the editor just knows what's good for him and says, hey, rein it in, guys.
As he said, this is what he said to his staff. Sorry, this is commentary dressed up as news reporting. Later on, he writes, could we please just stick to reporting to what was said rather than packaging it in exegesis and selective criticism. So we should also note that this is not the first time the Wall Street Journal has waded into this controversial territory, being accused, particularly by its staff and by readers, of being a little too easy on the president. But the Wall Street Journal isn't the only one kind of struggling with this issue. From my perspective, I look at it as, you know, editors have to edit, but also reporters have to do more than be stenographers. And at some point, editors, when they say just stick to the facts, they're just telling them to be stenographers.
Sure. And Judy, you're so right. The minute you pick a set of facts and report on those facts, somebody's going to accuse you, well, why did you use those facts? Why did you use some other facts?
Right. And so the Trump presidency has made us all think more substantially about how we report the news and whether or not we do just write the facts or that we bring our experience. Because if we really just needed someone to record what the president said and play it on CNN or print the speech verbatim in our newspaper, then we wouldn't need reporters. So reporters bring a certain amount of expertise, judgment, wisdom to the reporting, and how much of that should be in the stories they write.
It's interesting you say that, Judy, because I have a program on public radio in which I interview a different congressman every day, and I get telephone calls from people and faxes from people. We don't do faxes anymore, whatever we call it. Email from people who say, why don't you beat him up? Why don't you ask him this? Why don't you ask him that? So obviously there's an appetite for that too. Otherwise, we'd all just be watching C-SPAN all the time.
Right. So
was that a shot? Yes.
but it is true that the American public nowadays, I think they don't have a clear idea of what the actual press is. They watch Rachel Maddow or they watch Facts and Friends and they'll think, well, that's the press and that's clearly opinionated. But then again, you get the Washington Post reporting and the New York Times reporting, which the president often criticizes, which from my perspective seems like very good, clear, unbiased, contextual journalism, and that's also being criticized at this point.
There are people, depending on what your viewpoint is, read the New York Times and the Washington Post and look at that as unbiased reporting, and then there's half the country that says that is biased reporting. I want to read the Wall Street Journal that provides a more favorable view to President Trump, and that's a big bifurcation in the media now. And 20 years ago, you would read whatever newspaper came to the end of your driveway and you wouldn't really have a choice. And now everybody has a choice every morning to read either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal to get two different kind of versions of what's happening in the country and what's happening with the Trump presidency.
Now, JP, you have a wonderful service that you do. You're an aggregator of many news sources, and I pick it up every morning at EmpireReportNewYork.com. The president comes out and he attacks the press. Does the press fight back? And you read them all.
The press certainly does fight back. And on my page, I am very remiss to put stories about Trump on because it's so hard to put a balanced story about Trump. Whatever headline that you write about Trump is either going to be you are totally in the can for President Trump or you are totally against President Trump. And
I'm in the second category.
Right. So I think it's very hard for balanced reporters, balanced editors to try and have a balanced look at this president. And I think that's maybe why the media has such a low approval rating is because Americans view them as in the tank, either for or against whoever the president is.
Yeah. Well, you know, the question is, how important is a free press in America? I think we know that if you don't have a free press, you have a form of fascism. And the question to me is that what Trump is trying to do in this country, which is to basically shut down the press as an independent force in the country?
He wouldn't want to shut down the press because he believes that the press is what elected him and that he loves to have them as a foil. I think it's hard for him to compete with the Democrats on facts, on issues, on personality, on all those things. But when he has a foil like the media,
yes,
and it is almost like a recirculating narrative where the more he attacks them, the worse they're going to be to him and the more ammo he has to attack them. He loves the press and he loves being attacked. He likes bad press just as much as he likes good press.
Interesting. I don't know that I agree with you, but it makes me want to ask the always brilliant Judy Patrick a question. And that is, Judy, at your newspaper, after Trump attacks the way that he does to the press, do you ever get a letter? Do you ever get anyone on the phone and say, see, he's absolutely right?
Oh, our letters to the editor column are full of Trump of Trump supporters and Trump opponents as well. He's a magnet for public interest, and it's one of the ways that he is shaping our public discourse now, and I think in a bad way, because it's fascinating. CNN, the cable news channels at night are full of Trump coverage. The papers are full of Trump coverage. When we write a Trump story, we see the page views go through the roof. But the problem is we're not covering the issues. We're covering what he said. These wild and crazy comments, and we get so focused on them, we don't talk about the transgender changes in the military. We don't talk about the changes, the regulatory changes at the APA, what's happening at the national parks. We don't really talk. We get so focused on those, and rightfully so to some extent, but the public is fascinated by it. Wading through what's going to happen to the Medicaid regulations under, changes to the federal health insurance is hard work. It's boring. It's not that interesting. But as citizens, you really have a right to do it. But it's far more fun to kind of debate whether or not, the president is racist or the Trump, or whether or not he tweets too early in the morning.
But don't you think that's terribly important? I mean, when he calls for, a wall that's going to cost billions of dollars by the time it's done, to keep those people out of here, don't you think that's policy?
I absolutely do. I do. But I almost think it's playing into his hands of distracting us. We often joke that he's easily distracted. I think the press is easily distracted. But I agree with you totally, Alan. I think when he says these outrageous things or makes these outrageous proposals, well, we need to, as the press, to look at them, but also take a harder look at them to really get at the meat of, or the nut of what he's talking about.
Okay. So, but that's fascinating. I have a column. It's in several papers. It's not in yours, Judy. I did.
But it's available online.
It's available online, and all you have to go to is Empire Reports, and you'll see it doing a terrific job of putting it right where it belongs. I wrote a column last week in which I said Trump has sucked the air out of state politics. In other words, I was talking to a major reporter who works for New York Tabloid the other day, and he said, it's hard to get a story in the paper now about state politics because it's all Trump all the time. Now, unlike you, Judy, I think I disagree with one nuance of what you said, and that was that you thought it was the newspapers which were making these decisions. It's not. You know full well, and so does the head of MSNBC, and so does the head of CNN, that the day that they don't put Trump up front is the day somebody's going to the other channel.
It's true. It's true, and especially in that medium. They are so responsive to that meter going up and down in terms of ratings.
Sure.
That they react. They have that's one of the criticisms during the primaries, is Trump got so much free press because people were reacting to him. And so was that a good thing or a bad thing?
Look, again, I want to bring us back to Pete's line about prostitution. People are doing what they need to do in order to survive. Look, if you didn't, Judy Patrick, if you didn't do what was in the interest of the people who are reading your newspaper, you wouldn't be the editor anymore, right?
It's true, but if I was just interested in ratings and page views, I would put women in swimsuits on the front page every day.
Well, there are those people who think you should, but
true.
Not me, of course. But yes, that's right. You could do that, but you live in a community and serve a community very well, I may add, that is dependent on their newspaper, and you are their newspaper. So therefore, you have a certain amount of leeway that when the New York Post, POST, or the Daily News are in a catfight with each other, they have to worry about how many people are going to see the headline in the other paper, and pick it up.
And you made a great comment on page views and clicks. More and more news outlets are focused on that because that's how they make money. And the way to do that is to either be rabidly pro-Trump or rabidly anti-Trump in their reporting, in their coverage, in the comments of their reporters. And you see it on Twitter all the time. That is the way to get more followers, more retweets, more likes, all that kind of thing.
Now, you, JP, I know you've talked to me about this, about that you look at the stories that you put up on the Empire page, this aggregation page, which everybody really ought to go to. Now, there's always going to be, you've talked to me about how many clicks various subjects get. So you're watching it too, right? So you know tomorrow.
I watch it like a hawk. That's all I care about.
And you know who to put up at the top of the page.
Yes, and I don't care about what I think is the most important story. As you, as an editor of a real newspaper, have to think, what is, Judy, you say, what is the most important
thing? And an intellectual, by the way.
And an intellectual, right.
Yes, she is.
Our page is not intellectual. It is purely what is the most exciting, salacious story in the state, and we see what gets page views. Alan Chartok's column tends to get page views. I don't have a commentary on why that is, but he tends to get a lot of page clicks and views, and that is where I think media and journalism is going, and a lot of people think that that is going to be a disservice to the citizens and the consumers of media.
But one of the things we are starting to increasingly focus is time on site, the amount of time someone spends with your story. In fact, radio stations, you obviously are clearly looking at the amount of time people stick with your podcast or your live stream or your stories. And so you know that your community is engaged. They're not just looking at it, saying, not interested, and clicking away. We're finding that that's a more valuable measure of success in my shop about whether or not a story is what we've done is valuable. So we are spending more time.
But that's a subjective concept also. Sure. What is value? Value may be, we want to make sure nobody's throwing crap in our water, right? Something you've done very well about. And it's true. Who wants to drink poison? On the other hand, if people don't want to read that stuff, and if it's all about getting clicks on your page views and everything else, that becomes another whole issue.
Well, the challenge is to make it so people do want to read the boring, as we call it, the broccoli stories about bad stuff in your water. You know, as long as we're talking about digital, can we pause for a moment and talk about the demise of the print edition of the Village Voice?
I was going to hope you were going to go
that
there.
That valuable New York
Madam
City
Chairwoman.
Paper. You know, I saw my initial reaction, oh my goodness, the Village Voice is gone, but it's not really gone. It's just, it'll stick around in digital. So are you really sad? Who's really sad that this print edition is going away?
I am.
Why?
Well, because I'm 76 years old and because I grew up with the Village Voice. And when my crowd is gone, nobody will know. I mean, you know, I don't read the New York Times in the paper anymore. I read it three times a night during my waking up periods online. And so by the next morning, I've got stuff, and often I've got stuff that they don't have anymore on their print edition. So yes, you're absolutely right. The trick, of course, is to make it work financially for the people who were putting it up that way. See, I'm not convinced that the Village Voice will survive because each ownership has paid more money or less money or whatever else, and now they have to figure out a way to make it work for them and to justify their investment. And I don't know that they can do that.
I remember growing up around Hartford, Connecticut, and there were very few mailboxes that didn't have that extra Hartford Current box where everybody had the Hartford Current delivered every morning. And I recently moved upstate, and there are so few boxes in my new neighborhood where people get have delivered either the Times Union or the Saratogian. And I was struck by that. You can say, boy, this person must be an avid newsreader if they're still getting the print edition. And the Village Voice is a publication that we link to very frequently on Empire Report. They have a guy named Ross Barkin who frequently does a lot of work for them. And they're a great in-depth reporting outlet. And it's sad to see the print edition go because it's a nostalgic thing for people, but something that I think we'll likely see more and more of.
Yeah, one of the chief problems with the Village Voice, as with many alternative weeklies, was their dependence on classified advertising. And that, of course, started to go away 10 years ago with the advent of Craigslist. I always was hopeful it would come back in some form, but it's not coming back. And now it's up to the Village Voice. They have great content. They just need a better business plan.
Well, I'll be honest with you. They used to have better content.
They have a history of good content.
Yeah, they do. I mean, when you look at somebody like Wayne Barrett, he was a terrific muck wrecker. And he was, you know, if there was something that's going to tick off the politicians in Albany, Wayne Barrett often did it, including in the politicians in New York City. But for some reason, he wasn't there. I went to school. I was in a class with a guy named Jack Newfield, who was a very famous reporter. He's not there anymore. So that while, you know, JP, you may mention, you know, one or two who were there, you got to pay these guys. And where's that money coming from?
With online, that's the truth. People are still under the impression that things online should be free. It's a fight we've been waging for a long time. I mean, people can go to the radio station and get their content for free, but you do actually have to raise money with fund drives to pay your people, to pay your enormous electric bill, I imagine. And,
sure.
We have to pay for our ink and our paper, and people especially need to be paid.
And you're always looking for new products. You've invested in a whole bunch,
we have.
In a whole bunch of different ways to go on this.
That's diversification is going forward. I mean, a website is fairly cheap to run, but it's still, the content doesn't get created by itself.
Well, no newsprint. You don't have to pay for newsprint.
It's true. It's true. You don't have to pay for delivery. You don't have to pay for the upkeep of the mechanicals. But
well, the reporter I mentioned from Village Voice, Ross Barkin, he frequently writes for other newspapers as well. So he I don't think is a full-time person on staff, and I do believe that local news is going to continue to be valuable. Local content is going to continue to be valuable, but those local newspapers need to study how to deliver their content to those people in those areas. And there's a guy in northern New York called the News Junkie. Have you heard of the News
yes.
Junkie? That person gets an astounding amount of page views every day, and it's all local news, and it's classifieds, it's marriage notices, it's divorce notices, it's local news like the State Fair and all that, and he does a terrific job of putting news out, and I think that local news will continue to be super valuable.
You know, I write another weekly column for the Berkshire Eagle. I know you know that, JP. And it's on local subjects, and it's are the cops doing their jobs? Or, you know, did they put the wrong kinds of sidewalks in Great Barrington? People love that stuff, no question about it. And so there are all kinds of things that are, nature abhors a vacuum, so there are all kinds of things that are going into that space. I know that the Berkshire Eagle was profoundly blessed because a group of really wealthy men bought it and put money into it. But whether the number of print editions is going to, it's a much better paper, but whether the number of print editions is going to really rise substantially, that speaks to what we've been speaking about here today. I doubt it.
You know, I agree with you all about the importance of local journalism. Poynter had a great piece this week about how valuable local journalism was in terms of covering Charlottesville and adding that voice, that there were certain things that the national media was not covering that the local media were covered very well. The issues behind the issues, the people behind the stories, all were important topics that needed to be explained, especially to that local populace, but the whole nation could have benefited by learning more about what was happening in Charlottesville, other than the fact that the president misspoke very badly.
Lied.
The president, right, and right, or expressed his opinions very frankly in a way that became very controversial.
Still lying.
But there were a whole array of issues on Charlottesville that really most people in the nation never even got to hear, that the local media did cover. Well, that's all the time we have, I'm afraid. Thanks to Alan Shartok and J.P. Miller, publisher of the Empire Report New York, for joining us this week. I'm Judy Patrick. Thanks for joining us for the Media Project. And we'll be with you all again next week when Rex returns.
They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Judy Patrick is the editor of the Daily Gazette, and J.P. Miller is publisher of the Empire Report. You can listen to our podcast of the Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.